Yikes. Which will kill you.
No, thank you.
Demons don't give a shit about locks.
A little bit grim.
Hi, listeners.
Hello. Hi. Welcome back.
Hi, Taylor.
Hi,
Jenny.
Look, we introduced ourselves.
Wow,
this
we're
time.
Getting so good at this.
Ask me why I'm out of breath.
Why are you out of breath, Jenny?
We've been cackling at TikToks for the last 45 minutes.
We wanted to start recording this like
1 hour ago.
A good long while ago.
Yeah. But we went through each other's like favorites.
Listen. I know. TikTok is not meant for me, a 30-year-old lady. But like, it's so funny.
Oh my gosh. It's, the things y'all come up with.
The youth of America is straight up hysterical.
I know. Like, I'm ready for them to start writing TV.
Ooh.
Because it is going to be hilarious.
Can we get them in office?
And like, oh, yes, absolutely. But also TV writing rooms.
Well, I mean.
Because like me, as like a 70-year-old lady, I'm going to still want to watch fucking funny TV.
Yeah.
And like, I just want them to like have all of their dreams be realized.
I
share their humor with the world because they're hilarious.
I want this generation in a boardroom that's like, give us healthcare or I'll yeet you into the pit.
Oh, and not be afraid to call out a boy named Kyle because his name is Kyle.
He was drinking a Bang.
Yeah.
And punched his drywall this morning.
Oh my God.
Driving his like jacked up ass truck. Like, oh my. Oh my. Well,
I love it so much. We have to stop. It's a problem. I will waste an entire work day.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. It's bad.
I got up this morning and I opened one eyelid and I was like, I wonder what's on TikTok. And so I opened my app at 7 o'clock this morning and I got out of bed at 8:15. Like, I have to get in the shower before my husband gets home or he's going to think I'm like blown off work today, which was not the case. I just wasted a whole hour. I let my cats go hungry for an hour and 15 minutes.
Those cats are not starving by any means.
No, they're not. They are that fatty chonk chonks.
Speaking of fatty chonk chonks, I'm sure you guys have heard Donut in like the first few episodes. And I just have to tell you, listen, he's here. He lives with me. He's my roommate. He's fat and he's starved for attention. So if you hear little meows
in the background
or like the swish of like cat fat flopping in the wind
or even like a tornado coming through, that's just Donut taking our microphone out.
Yeah.
We're going to get it back up.
He's a solid 18 pounds of Maine Coon mix.
I mean, he is a large cat.
He is large and in charge.
To put it lightly.
Thank
you.
Okay. Okay, so we're talking about folklore today.
Yes. I am very excited. Do you want to start or am I starting?
I'll start.
Okay.
But I do want to give a disclaimer that my folklore today is going to include a lot of narrative about the Christian faith.
Okay.
And I just, like, you can come for me because I, like, don't care, but, like, also don't.
Right. Like, we're going to be talking about, like, in this podcast in general, I think it's safe to say that no religion is safe.
Nothing is safe.
Nothing is safe. Nothing is sacred. So
yeah.
It just is what it is. We're going to have good conversation about all kinds of good ethical-y things up in here.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to start today.
Yeah.
So buckle up.
So here we go, because I'm about to tell you about Ostara, aka the real actual Easter.
Ooh.
Right. So because I'm not a fortune teller, like, I don't know when this episode is going to come out, but right now it's Lent.
Yes.
So Easter is still like a while away. But Ostara is one of the 8 Sabbats on the Wheel of the Year. The Wiccan Wheel of Year, the Pagan Wheel of the Year. 4 of these Sabbats align with either the equinox or the solstice. And then the other 4 are like halfway. They happen like every 6 to 8 weeks throughout the year. Ostara happens to align with the vernal equinox. Which falls between like the 19th and the 22nd, but we celebrate the first day of spring as March 21st.
Right.
So, Easter is, I don't want to say like the bastardization, but like the stolen version of Ostara.
Got it.
So there, I do want to start this off by saying that there's a viral image that floats around Facebook and Instagram like every Easter time. It's an image of a statue of Ishtar. So
yeah.
Ishtar is an Assyrian and Babylonian goddess. And it's like Ishtar is actually pronounced Easter. That's wrong. Ishtar is pronounced Ishtar.
Mm-hmm.
And although she is a goddess of fertility and sex, she is also a goddess of war. She is, I'll cover her like later down the road in further detail because she is linked in with my favorite mother of all demons, sex, rock and roll, goddess Lilith. They are tied in together. So I'll talk about her later, but just to let you know, if you see that floating around, like, don't believe what you see on Facebook, Ishtar has nothing to do with Easter.
Yeah, it's just, like, a couple of, like, letters that looks like our version of Easter, and I'm sure that that's, like, maybe kind of where...
Yeah.
Our terminology.
Well, and she is a goddess of fertility and sex, which...
I don't make Easter and fertility and sex the same until I think about the Easter Bunny. And I'm like...
Oh, well, boy, do I have good news for you, because I'm going to tell you about how all of these traditions from Ostara were stolen by the Roman Catholic Church and bastardized into what we know as Easter today.
I can't wait. Tell me everything.
Okay. So... there is a Anglo-Saxon Germanic goddess. Her name is Ostara.
Okay.
Or Ostra, hence Easter, just depending on the region where she's from. She is the goddess of spring and dawn, is very closely associated to the vernal equinox. And Easter, when... the Roman Catholic Church got a hold of it, or I'll just say Christianity to not like single out one branch. So when Christianity got a hold of it, they changed Ostara to one of their holy days. Honestly, the pinnacle of the Christian religion, when Jesus died and was resurrected again, that's the entire whole foundation that this faith is built on. But Easter, if you wonder why it floats around the calendar, it is because, and this is the most pagan shit you will ever hear, Easter falls on the first Sunday after the first full moon following the vernal equinox.
That's why we never know when Easter is.
That's right. That's why it changes. It can be as early as like March 22nd, or it could be 28 days later, depending on the cycle of the moon.
Ah.
Right. So there's that. If you wonder why Easter floats, that's why.
Got it.
It's because it's based on a vernal equinox. It's not based on like an actual date that Jesus of Nazareth was crucified.
Right.
It's based on the sun and the moon in balance. Okay. I'm getting ahead of myself.
That's fine.
Okay. So the word Ostara has Germanic roots. It refers to east, which is the cardinal direction that the sun rises from, in case you didn't pay attention in first grade science. Just going to clear that up for you right now.
Cool.
And this time of year is celebrated as a time of rebirth, renewal, spring. The birds are chirping. Mm-hmm. The leaves are blooming.
Someday we'll have this.
Rumor has it that leaves will bloom.
Someday.
I haven't seen any indication that that will happen soon here in northern Indiana.
I mean, come look at my backyard and we can talk. My backyard is an actual thicket. It has already got shit that's green.
That's very... Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
I mean, I'm very excited. It makes my heart very happy. But then I'm also thinking of midsummer when I'm going to have to go in and like rip it all out.
Well, it's fine. Little light landscaping.
Yeah.
Okay. So this time of year is celebrated as a time of rebirth, renewal. The Christians adopted this symbolism to represent the resurrection of Christ or Jesus of Nazareth, opposed to the earth. So Ostara, the goddess, was a symbol of the life cycle of earth and the faith and the promise that even though it's bleak and it's cold and it's been 6 months of no harvest and no resources, that time will come again.
Interesting. Okay.
And then the Christians stole it. And they were like, no, it happened to Jesus, not the earth.
Got it.
Got it. It's actually a concept. Obviously, that's been celebrated by so many religious groups. And it's a story that has been told throughout all of time by all of the people who have ever been.
Yeah, everybody needs hope. And I think that that's what it represents for all the religions, is that it is the promise of something better.
It is such a human intrinsic need to have something to look forward to. We talked about it a couple episodes ago, about making bright and shiny spots.
Right.
So we have something to look forward to. It's like an intrinsic need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it makes sense that, like, so many religions, like, yes, it may have started, like, in this, like, Ostara, but it makes sense for other religions to have been like, we need that, though.
Right. And, well, because paganism, I'm air quoting again, yeah, but, yeah, like, predates the mm-hmm. Roman Catholic Church.
Right.
But it was also, there was a character called Hathor, who was a deity of Egyptian origination, okay, who also represented this same thing.
Okay.
So, and I have always found it so incredibly fascinating the way that all of these different groups of people who thousands of years ago didn't have any communication,
right,
in and of themselves, and they still celebrated the same
ideas.
The same ideas, right, the same things that happened in nature and the world around them, and was just a celebration of existence. I'm going to spiral down a rabbit hole. Let me stick with Ostara.
I think overall that is a great, like, umbrella term that is folklore, though. Like, even though they didn't necessarily have, like, a whole lot of intercontinental written communication, there was still that, like, word of mouth that's being passed down to generation. So, like, while people may have traveled long distances and spread their stories,
yes,
like, back then, that's how folklore started. That's how all of this happened. That's
what it's a common point in the human condition.
Yep.
And I think the exact same thing is still happening today now.
Right.
Like, I will stand very steadfast that Christians and Muslims and all of the other 100 million religions in the world are all worshiping the same pinnacle force.
Right.
But that's me.
Right.
So, okay, we're talking about Ostara. I'm going to talk about, like, our Easter now, mm-hmm, and the traditions that we have and where they came from.
Great.
Okay, so we're going to talk about bunnies. I know, little, yay, baby bun buns. So, in the Celtic tradition of this, the hare is sacred to the goddess, and it is the totem animal of lunar goddesses such as Hecate, Freya, Holda, which maybe, like, I'll give them each their own episode. Hecate is a badass, though. Mm-hmm. Just Google it on your own if you have time after this.
I know her from Practical Magic.
Oh, my God.
The book and the movie.
Love that. Okay. Right,
continue.
She's really cool. So, the hare is a symbol for the moon. The goddess most closely associated with the hare is Ostara. The date of the Christian Easter, I already said, is determined by the phase of the moon. We already talked about it. So, the nocturnal hare, which rabbits are nocturnal. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like deer, dusk and dawn.
Yeah.
Sure. Are so closely associated with the moon, which dies every morning and is resurrected every evening, and represents the rebirth of nature in spring. And both the moon and the hare were believed to die daily in order to be reborn.
Oh.
Thus, the hare is a symbol of immortality. It is also a major symbol for fertility and abundance because, I just learned this today, did you know that the hare can conceive while already pregnant?
Oh,
that's why bunnies pump out babies like it's their job.
Blah, blah.
Gross.
Pass.
Yeah, hard pass on that for me.
Holy crap, I had no idea.
Love that for bunnies.
Facts.
Big facts. Okay, so there's the bunny. Why eggs? Because eggs are also a huge thing.
Right.
Right. And, like, in the commercialization of Easter that we have now, that's all it is. Like, the actual Christian, and Christians get really bent out of shape about it, that the true meaning of Easter is being lost in the bunnies and the eggs and the chocolate and the candy. Right. But, like, that the OG Easter That's kind of what it was about.
I'm really kind of surprised that, you know, we know in our day-to-day that, like, bunnies are, like, equal to sex.
Mm-hmm.
And we, like, make fun of it. Like, they bang like rabbits.
Right.
They mate like bunnies. Like, all of those things. Like, we have those kind of conversations. But then when it turns into, like, pastel colors and rabbits with big blue eyes, mm-hmm. like, they turn so innocent and so representative of the Christian faith that we forget that those, they're representing a sexual part of ourselves.
Correct.
That Christianity would rather scrub out and act like it doesn't exist until you are married and God deems it appropriate for you to have children.
Well, the Christian church has been using these very pinnacle points in human life and human nature and human relationships and putting stigmas on them to control the population for so many thousands of years that it has become an ingrained way of life.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, let's talk about eggs.
Yeah.
Okay. So Ostara in many depictions is carrying around an egg mm-hmm. with her. The egg not only symbolizes the potential of life as if it were a seed, but also balance. So it's the egg white and the yolk. It is the male and the female that comes together to fertilize the egg. It is the light and the dark. It's a balance struck and held perfectly still within the shell, almost immortalized in that moment, that it is a symbol of balance, which is why it's fitting to fall on the vernal equinox, because there are equal number of hours, light and dark, on this day. Pagan children during the equinox.
Little babies.
Little baby pagan babies.
Oh, they're so cute.
I love them so much. So they would bury eggs as if they were seeds, as a symbol of hope and rebirth and resurrection of life. They would take the chicken eggs or the duck eggs and they would bury them in the ground.
Okay.
Knowing that they weren't going to bloom into a flower.
But that was like the symbolization of that.
Correct. It's like knowing that even though there's life inside this egg, if you bury it, life will come from this egg of fertilization in the life cycle.
Okay.
So during the Dark Ages, the Christian church was working very hard to squash out the pagan traditions. They were very much in the mindset of the pagan traditions were so varied across the UK that they were really trying to bring everybody together and enforce a common moral code.
Right.
I'm not saying that that was a bad intention. I think that that is probably great for that time period. It has really been the foundation of, like, our modern history being built on was the Roman Catholic Church. But I will say it is probably, like, the oldest smear campaign that has ever been done in known history, that the Christian church effectively absorbed, repurposed all of the beautiful, deeply steeped tradition of a peaceful people for their own gain to control the masses.
Mm-hmm.
So during the transition to Christianity, when the Roman Catholic Church was out doing the Crusades and trying to convert people to Christianity, the priests in these small villages would dissuade the children from planting eggs, and they would reward children with small trinkets and treats for digging up the eggs that were planted by other children and delivering them back to the church.
What?
There's your Easter egg hunt.
I'm mad. What?
So, there's your Easter egg hunt.
You mean, like, it didn't start with, like, parents, like, very innocently, like, hiding Easter eggs, like, out in the world. Like, they put one, like, in a tree too high, so you had to, like, call mom to be like, I see it, but I can't get it. I need your help. No?
No. This was not a ploy put in place by Jelly Bean Factories. This is something that dates back to the Christian church and the ways that they manipulated people.
I'm mad about it.
So I am going to wrap up Ostara by telling you a story
mm-hmm.
that, you know, has been passed down through thousands and thousands and thousands of years. But this was a folk tale that these pagan mothers told their pagan babies
okay.
about Ostara. And yes. Easter, and it is the story of the one and only Easter Bunny.
I feel like I need to, like, dim the lights, get a blankie.
Gather round, children!
Oh, God.
Okay, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Okay. Once upon a time, the animal kingdom gathered together for a meeting in a flurry of great excitement. There was to be a very special party, and one very special guest was coming to visit. The very special guest was none other than the goddess herself, and every creature wanted to give her a very special gift. Now, some of the animals were very rich, and some were very poor, but off they went to prepare their gifts. Only the very best would do for the high goddess Ostara. Hare was very, very excited, and he dearly loved the goddess and all of the blessings that she bestowed upon him. Although he was very poor, he had a big, generous heart, and he was going to give her the very finest gift he could find. Hare rushed home to see what he could find to give to the goddess, and he looked everywhere, in the cupboards, under the bed, but there was nothing, even the larder was empty. He had absolutely nothing to give her, except for one thing. On the shelf in the larder was a single egg, and that was it. It was the only thing he had left, and Hare gently took the egg out of the larder and lovingly decorated it on her behalf and took it to the party. Hare was very worried. All of the other animals gave their gifts of gold and silver and precious jewels, and all Hare had was the egg. Eventually, all the gifts had been given, and Hare was the very, very last. He very shyly presented the goddess Ostara with the egg. She took it and looked at him and saw the true spirit of Hare. And there and then, the goddess appointed Hare as her very special animal because Hare had given away everything he had in sacrifice to the goddess.
Why do I feel like I want to cry?
It's a story that really is as old as time. It's if you sacrifice and give to a higher power, you will be rewarded for your sacrifice. And that's something that is very much ingrained in all religions.
Right, like that's tithing, basically.
It's tithing. It's karma. It's dharma. It is this idea that if you do the best that you can and work hard and sacrifice, you will be rewarded for that.
I love that.
It's really lovely.
Oh,
it's nice. So that is the story of Ostara. Yeah, you're welcome. The balance of light and dark.
Oh, good job. That was really good. I'm glad that I know things now.
Thanks.
I didn't know before.
I like pagan holidays. You're going to be hearing, you know, about every single one of them.
That's great. Cool. We're going to keep doing it.
All right.
All right. All right. Good story.
Thanks. I'm excited to hear about yours.
All right.
What are you going to tell me about?
Well, first of all, I want to tell everybody what we're drinking.
Okay.
So I made this mixed drink that is representative of my story tonight.
And it is so delicious.
I'm really glad. We're on glass number two. Mm. So.
Boy, are we.
Boy, are we. It is called The Perfect Storm. Is our mixed drink tonight. It is one part, it's one part Kraken.
Oh, she said it.
Great. Three parts ginger beer and then one lime wedge.
Listen, I gotta tell you, I love ginger beer. There's nothing like ginger that really makes you feel like you're doing something good for your body.
Uh-huh.
But also it's beer.
But is it though? Because I did not get carded.
You.
Well, I got carded for my Kraken.
But not the, did you buy them at separate places?
No, but it said like 21 and over under the Kraken, but it didn't say that under the ginger beer. So I was like, hold up. I don't know. I had a whole thing about it on the way here, but I did not look to see if there's an alcohol content on it.
Are we like getting nervous that we're at the age where people no longer card us?
I mean, I
will say if I don't dye my hair on time, I will stop getting carded because I have so many grays.
Oh.
I just feel the need to say that I'm very stressed most of the time. And that's why.
You have gray hair and I have all of the wrinkles because, first of all,
you do not have one single wrinkle.
Under my eyeballs, I have lots of wrinkles. And then I am perpetually surprised. So my eyebrows are always up. I have to redo my forehead makeup every day. Because my forehead wrinkles will get out of control.
These are girl problems so hard.
welcome.
Tell me a pirate story.
Also, if you have any suggestions for under eye cream, your girl is in need. So go ahead and
have you seen that meme? That's like if your childhood crush was Jonathan Taylor Thomas, it's time for an eye cream.
Yes, and I was like, fuck.
I feel personally called out by this meme.
Or if your boy crush had this kind of hair and it's like the heart hair.
Oh my God.
Which is exactly what me and my friends called it in like middle school. Was like, oh my God, he's got heart hair.
All of the Hansons. Mm. Do you remember Hanson?
Oh yeah.
Mm-bop. Doo-doo-boop. Ba-da. Mm-bop.
Scoop-bop. Okay. Wow. All right. Okay. Let's talk about the Kraken.
Okay. Please do.
Okay. So I hope everybody goes out and makes themselves this drink because it is quite good.
It is really yummy. A little splash of lime in there.
I would not order this at a bar, and on the website I'm gonna say that it had something red in it,
grenadine,
but it didn't list that on the like things of the ingredients that I was gonna need to buy.
Generally it's just like a little bit of a topper. If you have grenadine you can top it off.
Well, anyway, all right, so the Kraken is a tale that is old as time.
Tale is old as time,
as you would say. Not as old as Ostara, but he has been around for quite a while. So the ocean is inherently a very terrifying place.
As we have mentioned.
Yeah. I am not afraid of a whole lot. Like, bugs don't bother me. Snakes don't bother me.
We saw a gardener snake when we were going on a nature hike last fall, and your skeleton almost exploded out of your skin.
That's because it surprised me. But if I were to just see a gardener snake and it said, hello, I'm a friendly gardener snake, I'd be like, hey, friend.
I don't think that's true.
It is.
Okay. All right.
But nothing scares me quite as much as dark water. Your girl's not getting into dark water. If it is dark outside, I'm not getting in water. I don't care if it's a swimming pool. I don't care if it's a lake. It's your grandma's pond. I don't care. I'm not getting in it.
Okay. Fair.
Creepy. No, I don't like it.
Do you remember the show, Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Absolutely.
There was an episode of a red murky swamp monster that came out of the flappy flaps in swimming pools.
No.
And I have been terrified. I'm 30 almost. Terrified of the swimming pool flappy flaps since then. So I'm with you. I don't do dark water.
No, I don't like dark water. I like the ocean.
I don't.
I'm not going in there after dark.
I don't even want to go in.
I'll go in the ocean.
I want to drink a Blue Moon by the ocean.
Ooh, yeah, I do want to do that too. But I'm like going to go play around in the shallows, in the waves. That's cool. But I also want to be surrounded by my friends and family. So if I get swept out to sea, at least they can call the Coast Guard and tell them like a general direction in which I got swept.
Out. She's out. That's the direction. Away from the beach.
Away. So, all right. The ocean is very scary, but also awe-inspiring. We don't know a fraction of everything that is out there. There are many, many creatures that still need to be discovered.
Ugh.
It freaks me out. Blah, blah, blah. I read something today while I was doing research was that, like, we know more about our solar system than we do about our oceans here on Earth.
Big gross.
Why? Why are we out there up in space fucking around pissing aliens off when we got sea creatures?
Because the Earth is dying and we need a plan B.
Accurate.
Okay, go on.
True. Climate change is real.
Greta, is that you?
Sorry. Okay. This tale of the Kraken originated in Scandinavian folklore.
Ooh, so I love Viking.
Go ahead and go to your Viking place. You can just go ahead and picture Jason Momoa. As a brunette Viking.
I'm sorry, but Eric from True Blood is the only thing. That was a genuine reaction.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. He is so fine.
Oh. I need to watch it.
We'll post a picture of him on Instagram just so you can drool over him. He is so good looking.
Oh, man. Oh, Alexander.
Skarsgård.
Them Skarsgårds, they know how to do it.
Ooh, man. That mom and dad.
Well, Ooh. Bill Skarsgård is his dad. You know Bill.
From what?
He's in Mamma Mia. He's like one of the dads.
We saw Mamma Mia together in like 2010.
You haven't watched it since?
Taylor.
Oh, okay. So I am the movie person in this group of two. I have seen every movie a million times.
I've never seen any movie once.
That I have not made her watch.
And then she's seen it
once.
10 years ago.
All right.
Cool. Okay. Bill Skarsgård. Okay. Vikings are hot. The Kraken is a Viking.
You Google Bill Skarsgård for a minute.
Okay, got it.
All right. So Scandinavian folklore, the first written account of the Kraken is in 1180. Picture that year. 1180.
I love the 10th century.
It is a wild time.
I bet.
King Severa warned his troops to keep an eye out for the huge squid-like monster that swims the coast of Norway, Greenland, and Iceland. And that's the first written account that we have. And he didn't call him the Kraken. He just said there is a very scary monster out there.
There's a big-ass squid. Watch out for it.
Yeah, like, keep your eyes peeled.
Got it.
After returning from Greenland, an anonymous author of a natural history work that was in, like, Norwegian. I don't know. I didn't
put Norwegia? Norway.
Norwegian.
He's a Norwegian.
What's
what? It's Norway. Somebody Norwegian is from Norway.
Yeah, right? But it was a Norwegian work of art. Or work. It was a Norwegian work.
Okay.
It was the adjective, not the noun.
Got it. Go on.
All right. We were both saying the same thing.
Yeah.
All right. I didn't put it in here because I was not going to be able to pronounce it.
Cool.
But it happened in 1250.
Wow.
Yeah. He described in detail the physical characteristics and feeding behavior of these beasts.
Ooh. There's more than one?
Yeah.
Well, I got the heebs.
No, thank you.
I'm getting on a boat tomorrow.
Didn't think about it. I'm sorry.
It's fine.
You're going to have to keep your eyes peeled for the Kraken.
Please cater to my needs.
Yes, I will. This anonymous author proposed that there must have been only two in existence. You're not going to Norway. You're fine. So it stems from the observation that the beasts have always been sighted in the same parts of the Greenland Sea, and they each seem to be incapable of reproduction as there were no increase in their numbers. So this person only saw two, ever.
Okay.
I had questions about it too, but because it was 1250, there was not a lot of detail. So, going into some different descriptions of the Kraken over time, this is not just this one anonymous person's description. It is similar to the giant squid. There have been descriptions that it is crab-like. Yeah, I was out on crab-like. No, thank you.
So you mean delicious and butter.
It is also a huge octopus. And then this is what really got me, that it had spikes in its suckers.
No. And I'm out. I don't like it. I'm out.
Don't put sharp things in squishy things.
Pick one.
I don't like it.
You can't mix it.
No. So the famous Swedish 18th century naturalist Carl von Linné included the Kraken in the first edition of its systematic natural catalog, Systema Naturae.
Oh, what a beautiful accent.
Thank you. In 1735. So
we're skipping ahead
a little bit. There he gave the animal the scientific name Microcosmos.
There ain't nothing micro about that,
ain't
buddy.
Nothing micro. I don't
macro squidmas.
Yeah. Macro, no thank you.
Giant Squidwards.
Ew. But he omitted it in later editions.
Oh.
So it was like in one, and then he tried to act like it didn't happen. Suspish.
Big.
Eric P. who was a bishop, made several claims regarding the Kraken around the 1700s, including the notion that the creature was sometimes mistaken for an island.
What?
Like, it was as big as a whole island. Just, like, laying out there at sea.
Somebody was like, look at that squid, and somebody's like, that's Great Britain.
Right. Okay. So I was like, hold up.
Wait a minute.
As big as an island. But this theme came to light multiple times during this research.
Oh, really?
So he was not the only person that thought this.
Oh.
Yeah. So it can be as, like, regular air quotes, as, like, a giant squid, or as large and crazy as, like, a crab-like island.
Like Moana?
Like Moana. Ah!
So, I'm shining.
Are
we going to get copywritten? Leave me alone.
Did we know that Moana is Little Mermaid backwards? So, like, Moana wants to go into the sea. Little Mermaid wants to come out of the sea.
Oh.
The crab is, like, the thing that's, like, don't touch anything that's human.
I was, like, Moana backwards is Anna Om.
Not what I was talking about, okay, but sorry. Okay. But, like, the crab, he's, like, big in Moana, and he loves the human things.
Do you
know? And then Sebastian is little, and he hates human things.
Oh, my God.
It's, my mind was blown. But. It's an accurate
thing. We need to do a Disney conspiracy episode.
Oh, can we tag team it?
Yeah. Is conspiracies next after folklore?
I think so.
Okay, cool.
All right. We're not guaranteeing that that is next because we both have two vacations to go on. But, okay. So it's big as an island.
Mm-hmm.
And that the real danger to sailors was not the creature itself, but the fact that when the, like, island type Kraken would go back down into the ocean, it'd create a whirlpool. And ooh, that's what brought the ships down.
It was that and not the spikes inside the suckers?
Right.
Okay.
Swedish author Jacob Wallenberg described the Kraken and hit in the 1781 work My Son the Galley, which was written in Swedish. But I translated it to English as My Son on the Galley. He described the Kraken as being a little smaller than the island that he lived on and sat at the bottom of the ocean and was surrounded by fish.
Ooh.
When he descends to the surface, it creates huge waves which could go on for many miles.
Oh.
Right. In 1802, a Frenchman named Pierre recognized the existence of two giant squid octopods.
That's not right. Octopuses.
What is the term for squid and octopus? Like metapods? Maybe not.
I don't think it's metapods.
Cephalopods. Yeah.
Yeah, because, yeah, invertebrates.
Don't tweet at us.
don't do anything at us.
Okay. So he described those in his encyclopedic description of mollusks.
Oh, sure. Okay.
So this man, Pierre, claimed that the first type, the Kraken octopus, had been described by Norwegian sailors and American whalers, as well as ancient writers, and the much similar second type, the colossal octopus, which was reported to have attacking a sailing vessel off the coast of Angola. So we have a lot of things that are, like, being brought into the same thing. So, like, the Kraken is bringing down the ship in a lot of the old artwork that we see. Like, that is a mixture of two different kinds of folklore that are happening.
Oh, okay. It's, like, a very stereotypical piece of work, though. The tentacles wrapped around a ship.
Uh-huh.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that is two different kinds of things that are happening.
I love the blending of cultures like this, right, especially as expressed through art.
Yeah, absolutely. I loved all the art, like, looking at all of this was very cool. I think the art that has been created in the last 25, 50 years has been very, like, video game style.
Sure.
They look very much, like, humanoid.
Mm.
I like the idea of this just being, like, a giant-ass octopus.
Yeah.
That is like, oh, look, a ship.
I want to play.
Yeah, let's play. Okay. So now let's get into something that is a little bit more real life.
Okay.
That has been proven. There are two types of squids that fit this description. So there's the giant squid that measures 43 feet long. Humongous.
Oh, wait, hold on. I'm trying to wrap my brain around that. That's half of a football field.
Yep.
Wait a goddamn minute. That's huge.
That is so big. Yeah, and that's real. That's like, we have those actually real life in our oceans. And fun fact.
Oh, those are real.
Yeah. These can be found in every ocean on our planet Earth.
I have to go on a cruise.
So sorry.
You sound sorry.
Yeah, I'm not. I want you to be sending me pictures of just, like, random shit you see and be like, is this a Kraken?
I'm going to see a piece of seaweed and be like, tell my family I love them.
Right. Okay, so that is the giant squid. There is one above that.
What?
There is and I'm not kidding you, its name is the colossal squid.
It's like the final boss
uh-huh.
that you meet.
Yep.
You work your CEO. way through the squids.
Uh-huh. He's the top of the pyramid of the squids.
How much more colossal can a goddamn squid get?
Well, okay, so not a whole lot. It's 49 feet is the maximum length that we've, like, found one at. But we have only measured 50 of these.
Where do they live?
In any ocean you can pick. But of the ones that have, like, washed ashore because they've died,
mm-hmm.
they have been 49 feet or less. But that is not a great sample size.
Are we able to, like, determine the age of these? Like, are they adolescent squids?
I don't think so. I think from, like, the scars that they've seen on them and stuff, they've been around for a while, but I wasn't able to find, I didn't look for anything that says ages on them.
This, my mind is swimming.
Oh, my God.
I hate myself for that.
Thanks.
But I, okay.
Its only known predator is the sperm whale. And we only know that because sperm whales have been, like, found dead with colossal octopus parts in them.
Parts.
And we've also found sperm whales with scars of suction cups on their faces because the octopus put up a fucking fight.
With a sperm? How big is a sperm whale?
I don't know. Google it.
Okay.
All right. Welcome back.
My God. So a sperm whale. I like the excuse of saying sperm. It's uh-huh. a word you don't ever get to say enough
right,
of.
Right.
Is 70 feet long. So 30 foot longer.
Yeah.
Than the biggest squid that
has ever been found.
Ever been found with like suction cup scars on it. All I can think of is Michael Phelps at the Olympics when he like went cupping and that's what like the whale looked like.
That's my chiropractor makes me do the cupping all the time.
Yeah. And does
I'm
it work?
Like, yeah, sure. But it makes me look like I got attacked by a damn old octopus.
Like a kraken.
Yeah. It makes me mad.
All right.
It doesn't make me mad. I just look dumb. But I don't wear anything that shows.
Who's looking at your back?
I know.
Besides your husband.
I don't wear any bathing suits or anything like that. So it's not like.
Well, we live in Indiana. There's approximately 6 weeks you can wear a bathing suit and not die.
Right. Okay, so this colossal squid is 49 feet long at the current record, and everything that I found was very much like, this is the current record. They fully anticipate that there are bigger ones out there. We just haven't seen them.
Yikes.
No, thank you. Do you want to know how much the 49-foot caught colossal squid weighed?
Oh, my God.
I'll tell you.
Okay. Okay, tell me.
1,000 pounds. 1,000.
That's, I feel like, so large. What do I have to compare that to?
I don't know.
But I also feel like it's a squid. Like, a lot of the really dense stuff that's, like, in whales, like, bones or mm-hmm. whatever, like they don't have. They're mostly jello.
Right. Molded jello.
Ugh.
All right, I'm about to tell you the scariest part of the colossal squid. Are you ready? It has barbs in it, suction cups.
What? No. Like,
yeah.
What?
It has barbs that will pull you in its suction cups.
No.
Yeah, I found a video on it. I am scarred.
I'm not looking that up. You can't make me.
No. I'm more scared of that than any kind of demon story you're about to tell me. No, thank you. Because that is fucking real. And they live in our oceans.
In any ocean?
All of them.
I don't want to get on a boat.
I mean, most likely they're not going to come up from their deep, dark depths. Because they don't like to be seen.
Do they live in the deep, dark depths?
Yes.
Okay. This is very 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Did you have to read that when you were a kid?
No. But he's in my notes.
Oh, okay. Keep going.
Okay, so we didn't catch one of these guys on video until 2006.
That was very recent.
Yep, that was the first time we saw one, like, live in motion. The only other ones we'd seen since then were dead that got washed up onto the sea. Sure.
Oh, like, my God.
I can't imagine being on that submarine and being like, oh, my God, it's the first live one we've ever seen. Ugh. I don't like it.
Oh, God.
We do have footage of squids and octopi attacking swimmers, which is where part of this like folklore and legend has come from that they have attacked humans in the past, but they're very much like sharks. Like, not all sharks attack humans. It's just because we've seen it happen in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Human nature is to be terrified of it. So we're like, everybody's going to be attacked by an octopus.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not going to happen, but it has happened before. So this Frenchman later dared more sensational claims.
Ooh.
He proposed that 10 British warships, including the captured French ship of the line Ville de Paris, which had mysteriously disappeared one night in 1782, must have been attacked and sunk by giant octopuses.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that's in line with our thought that these things are big enough to take ships down.
Well,
the British, however, knew that the ships had been lost in a hurricane off the coast of Newfoundland in September of 1782, resulting in a disgraceful revelation for this Frenchman. So he had to strike out everything that he wrote.
What an idiot.
Right. Because there was a survivor.
Oh, God.
And the survivor guy was like, nah, bro, it was a hurricane.
Thanks, though.
Yeah, like, you're dismissed. Not a sea monster. Sit down.
Hmm.
Victor Hugo wrote about the Kraken.
Oh, my man, Vic.
Vic.
Oh, I love him so much.
Oh.
In what work?
Toilers of the Sea.
Mm.
A main character is attacked by an octopus that wraps its tentacles around him and nearly kills him.
Cool.
So fun fact about this book. So he's writing all of this like fictional stuff. And then he's like, hold on, tea in the field, writing a whole ass chapter about how much I hate octopus.
I wish he would have put that in Les Mis.
Yeah. So he writes an entire chapter outside of the storyline about how much he hates this type of animal.
That Why? He
thinks that they are malicious.
That an octopus was out to get me.
Yeah. Like, I quote, malicious intent. Like, hates them.
Well, I mean, they're genius.
They are so fucking smart.
Have you seen that video where an octopus gets itself out of a jar?
Yeah, that is the inspiration for the octopus in Finding Dory.
Oh, I love that movie. I've seen that one.
Yeah. Good job.
Thanks.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you. Well, I think we watched it together.
I probably made you go to the theater with me.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So he hates them. He hates anything with tentacles. He describes them as a glutinous, which I was like, wait, I don't have gluten in it. But it does not say gelatinous, which is what I think nowadays.
You gotta need that gluten-free octopus.
I would like a gluten-free octopus. A glutinous mass with malignant will.
Is it gluttonous?
Gluttonous?
Like insatiable?
Maybe.
Okay.
The lady on YouTube said glutinous because I was like, wait a second, that's not wheat. So take that with what you will.
Okay.
He also describes them as devil fish.
I agree.
Not
delicious
wrong.
Deep fried.
Not wrong. I bet Victor was a hilarious human.
Really? Because this is not a hilarious tale.
No, it is actually terrible. But I just like imagine him like with his quill and his pen being like, devilfish.
He was like sitting on a beach somewhere and an octopus had washed up and he stepped on it and it got stuck on his foot and he was like, God, devilfish.
Right. Okay, so the Kraken could have been a way for people to explain undersea volcanic activity occurring in the Iceland region, which would include bubbles of water, sudden dangerous currents, and the appearance of new islands or islets. So that like goes along with that like island type, under the water, big ol' islands theory.
Sure.
So it's just a way for them to describe something natural that was happening, which, as we know, is a theme of folklore.
Mm-hmm.
It was mentioned in Herman Melville's tale, Moby Dick, and then is also in 20 Leagues Under the Sea, which is our famous quote, release the Kraken.
Yay. Love that.
So as you ended with a
handed down folklore tale, I am going to end on a poem.
Oh my God, we didn't even plan that.
We did not even plan
it. We're just super vibes right now.
Yeah, we are.
Okay, cool.
So in 1830, Alfred Tennyson published the Irregular Sonnet, The Kraken, which described a massive creature that dwells at the bottom of the sea. Below the thunders of the upper deep, far beneath the abysmal sea, his ancient, dreamless, and uninvaded sleep, the Kraken sleepeth. Faintest sunlights flee about his shadowy sides, above him swell huge sponges of millennial growth and height, and before and far away into the sickly night, from many a wondrous grot and secret cell, a numbered and innumerous polypi, winnow and giant arms and slumbering green, there hath he lain for ages, and will he lie battening upon huge sea worms in his sleep, until the latter fire shall heat the deep, then once by man and angels to be seen, in roaring he shall rise and on the surface die.
That didn't even rhyme.
No, that is why it is an irregular sonnet.
Love that.
But that is
one I love
story of the Kraken.
I can tell that you graduated with like your communication degree because you could name the type of sonnet that was.
Thanks to Wikipedia is what I could attest to that.
Blame it on college.
Blame it on college. I paid a lot of money to go to college.
Right.
And yeah, so.
That was an excellent story.
Thank you.
I love that so much. I feel like the Kraken is something that has been like a little commercialized a little bit, but like to know, like, can you imagine being a sailor and having like tales of the Kraken like told to you that it was like a very real demise that you could face?
Oh, absolutely. And like a chance that you could like see one, like a baby one, and be like, it's got tentacles. They told me it'd have tentacles.
I see tentacles and spikes.
Right. Like, I can't imagine like having something that would be so like told with, I can't think of the word I'm thinking of, like extraness.
Extrapolation.
Yeah. That, and then see something in your everyday world that would be so similar and be like, but it's not so far-fetched that it doesn't exist.
Because it's not. It's like these sensationalized tales of something very, very real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sure that there was a boat that saw a giant dead floating 50-foot squid,
mm-hmm.
and some sailor told a sailor who told a sailor, and it is
now this. 100 feet.
Right. And now it's the size of an island, and now it has spikes, which it actually fucking did.
But. Right. And that's the thing. Like, I think it was such an interesting way to describe what could be happening with volcanic activity. Because they didn't know what that was and, like, how to explain it.
The ways that we justified, like, natural phenomenon in an unnatural way.
Which is how and why we have folklore.
It's very fascinating. I love this topic so much.
Yes. I can't wait to do more. Can't wait to do more cryptids and more whys behind the way we are today.
But next week is...
Conspiracies.
Conspiracies.
Oh, snap. Do you know what you're doing yet?
I do, but I'm not telling.
Okay. I don't know what I'm doing yet. I need to do my research.
Love it. Okay. Well, thanks for hanging out. I hope you had a good drive to work.
Yeah, me listener. Too. Go ahead and follow us on all the things. We have an Instagram. We have a Twitter. We have a Facebook page.
Yeah.
Go follow us on all of those. Look for A Little Bit Grim or A Little Bit Grim Podcast, and you'll find us.
All right.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Bye.